Hello, and welcome to the ACTIS podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI, as well as sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and ACTIS. I'm Carla Kozak, Editorial Manager of Products and Events for ACTIS, and I will also be your host for today's show. Today's topic is AI use in healthcare, and my guest today is Karen Lane, MSNED, CCDS, CCDSO, CDIP, RN, Clinical Documentation Integrity Specialist 3 at an academic medical center in the Midwest. A quick reminder that the ACTIS podcast offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDSO or CCDS recertification requirements. I'll be sharing the instructions for claiming that CEU at the end of the show, so do stay tuned for that. But before Karen and I jump into our conversation today, just a brief word about today's sponsor. Today's episode of the ACTIS podcast is brought to you by the CCDS Exam Prep Pre-Conference, a two-day, fast-paced, intensive course designed to prepare eligible or soon-to-be eligible candidates for the Certified Clinical Documentation Specialist Credential Exam. It takes place April 19th to the 20th, immediately prior to the ACTIS conference, in the same hotel in Chicago, so it's perfect for those of you who are already traveling to go to the conference. Or you can choose to come by just for this pre-conference event. During these 2 days, our expert instructors will cover the main focus areas of the CCDS exam, including healthcare regulations, reimbursement, and documentation requirements related to the IPPS, anatomy and physiology, ethics and compliance, and more. All attendees will also gain access to a comprehensive practice exam complete with remediation. Space is limited, though, so we encourage you to secure your spot today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Karen. I'm so excited to have you here with me to discuss the use of AI in healthcare. And I know this probably seems a little bit obvious to our listeners, but I thought we could start the conversation right at the basics, the most basic building block of this topic. If you had to explain it, what would you say artificial intelligence is?
So that's a really great question, and it's actually the most important place to start because the term AI gets thrown around like fairy dust. Honestly, AI has been around since the 1950s, and at its heart, AI, really, it's just fast pattern recognition. Think of it like a seasoned emergency room nurse who walks into a room and instantly knows the patient's sick before she even looks at the vital signs monitor. Why? Because she's seen that pattern 1,000 times. AI does this, but with billions of data points in seconds. It's a math-driven logic tool, but not a thinking brain.
And I know there's a couple of different kinds of AI, and I'm sure that affects the definition of it too. Can you talk a little bit about what consumer-based AI is and versus, say, healthcare-based AI?
Sure. This is where it gets a little bit sneaky. I think there's some misconceptions that you have to go to a specific website to use AI. But in the consumer world, the avenues of AI look very different. And many people don't even realize they're interacting with an AI bot. It's not a chat box, always. Sometimes it's the autocomplete of your text message that finishes your sentences. It's the customer service assistant on a retail website that asks you, "How can we help you today?" It's even the algorithm that decides what video you'll see next on social media. These tools are trained in the Wild West of the internet, the good, the bad, and the weird. And because it feels so seamless, people often lower their guard. They don't realize that there isn't a security bubble around these interactions. And if you're venting to a customer service bot about your medical bill, you might be feeding personal data into a system that wasn't built to protect it. But when we move over to that healthcare-based AI, that's where the security bubble really comes into play. Unlike those public tools that are connected to the Wild West of the internet, professional healthcare AI is often what we call a closed system. In fact, many healthcare systems take the extra security of turning off internet searching in their AI tools. And you might think, wait, if I can't search the web, is it still smart? And the answer is absolutely. By turning off the internet, we ensure that our internal tools are only talking to the high-quality vetted medical data that we've given it. It isn't getting distracted with a Wikipedia entry from 2012. It's focused entirely on your organization's policies, clinical guidelines, and the patient's record. It's a powerful tool that stays inside of your health system. That's a massive win for securities because eliminating the risk of data leaking out to the public is very important. But, and this is the most important part, even though it's a clinical authority in terms of speed, it still requires our human verification.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. I love the examples of real life AI that you provided because I think you're right. We interact with it so much and we don't even realize it half the time. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's great that you highlighted that it's sort of a closed system when it's used in healthcare and that it's not reaching out to the internet necessarily and pulling up, like you said, that Wikipedia page from God knows how long ago.
Yeah.
So lots of really interesting points you made there, especially, again, the human verification fact. There's just bringing that human element in. It's not – you need – that sort of double checking that everything's correct. And I think that's something that comes up so often in AI.
Absolutely.
What are some of the ways that AI is being used in healthcare and why is it so popular? Like, what are the benefits healthcare organizations are seeing from it?
So it's really about taking the robot work away from the humans so we can get back to the heart of our work. We have two big areas that are total game changers. So let's first talk about like CDI and coding. So I'm scrolling through the work queue and I see a chart that maybe I want to do. I click on it and then I go, uh-oh, this patient's been here for 40 days. This chart has hundreds of documents. As a human, it would take me hours just to piece together the timeline of the care. But AI can read the entire history and give me some type of summary in seconds. It's like having a superpower that lets me see the big picture without getting lost in the weeds. Another great example, and this goes kind of back to my floor days, the manual acuity scoring that the charge nurses had to do every day. We've all seen them spending an hour at the end of the shift manually calculating patient acuity scores, calling the house supervisor, trying to reassign staff based on the numbers. Now we have an AI bot that can do that in real time. It pulls in lab values, vitals, notes, updates the acuity, scores it automatically. It can even suggest those staffing changes for us. Instead of the nurse being stuck in an office with a calculator on a phone, she's back out on the floor supporting her team and being at the bedside. And while we automate these administrative math problems, we aren't replacing the nurse, we're freeing them up. We're taking away that clerical fatigue so they can actually use their clinical brain where it matters most with the patient and their family.
I love that concept of freeing up the nurse to do what they're trained and most skilled in clinically versus that administrative burden that I can see that having a huge impact. Going back to what you said, though, about the importance of the human element in AI, what are some of the risks of using AI in healthcare, and what do people need to be cautious of? Are there ethical or legal ramifications they should consider?
So this was actually the focus of the article I recently wrote for the ACTIS Journal in January. We have to talk about AI hallucinations. And although it sounds funny and there's probably an ICD-10 code, it's really serious. AI is incredible at scanning the entire history of the patient, but sometimes it really forgets to look at the details. So an example might be a patient who had a history of an amputation 10 years ago. The AI might see that in a deep archival search of the old record and pull it forward into a current active problem list, or maybe even suggest a complication condition because of the amputation. Another example, AI might see the patient is tachycardic and has a low-grade fever, and it will just hallucinate the diagnosis of sepsis in a summary, even though the physician has clearly documented that this patient is just in a post-operative period, reacting normally to a surgery that they had. Sometimes consumers and even clinicians don't realize they're interacting with AI tools because it's so quietly tucked into the background of our software. And it might feel like a helpful nudge or an automated summary, but AI can be a clinical authority on data sets, huge data sets, but only a human can be an authority on how it connects to the patient. And as I discussed in my recent journal article, even the most advanced systems can hallucinate or get a little bit too overconfident, see that lab value, and jump to some conclusion that doesn't fit the whole picture. And again, this is why human verification isn't just a suggestion. It's our professional guardrail. We can use the AI to do the heavy lifting and sorting through the data, but we have to keep the human at the helm to make the final call.
Thank you so much, Karen. And I do want to just point out, since you referenced the article you wrote for the CDI Journal, that ACTIS members can access the CDI Journal by going to actis.org, selecting member resources, and then selecting CDI Journal. Karen was kind enough to contribute an article to the January-February edition about this topic. So if you want to learn more, I definitely would encourage you to check out her article. And I wanted to make sure you all knew how to do that. So thank you again, Karen. Now, how does AI come into play when it comes to denials? I know this is something you're focusing on at the ACTIS conference the next month. Are insurance companies using AI to review claims? How does that work?
This is a great question, and it's the one I most often hear from my colleagues. In the past, a denial was always a human decision. A nurse or a doctor at the insurance company would look at a claim and disagree with it. But today, AI acts like a superpowered spam filter. You know, think about your email. Sometimes a perfectly legitimate message ends up in your junk folder because the filter didn't like a specific word, or maybe the sender looked a little off. That's exactly how AI is being utilized by insurance companies in the denial process. It's a high-speed gatekeeper that scans every claim before a human even sees it. If the claim doesn't perfectly match the algorithm's pattern for payment, it's automatically pushed into a denial pile. The challenge for us in CDI is that these filters are looking for very specific language. As nurses, we know that there are many ways to describe a patient's condition, but the AI is often looking for specific trigger words. If the doctor documents shortness of breath or needs supplemental oxygen, but the AI was told specifically to look for respiratory distress, it might trigger a denial simply because those code words were missing, even though the clinical truth is right there in the notes.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there is a lot to consider there. And I think it all, again, goes back to the point you keep reiterating, that AI isn't perfect, and it needs verification, it needs human validation. So where should someone new to AI start? How can they get involved with using AI to assist in healthcare?
So that's a question I get all the time, and I'm smiling because my answer is always stay away from the medical record. If you are novice, naive, whatever synonym you want to use, don't start in a high risk zone like work, like medical records. We don't learn to drive by racing a Formula One race car through the hospital zone. We want to start in an empty parking lot. So let's take the empty parking lot and go to your kitchen. And I challenge everyone to do the fridge challenge. We've all been there. It's 6 o'clock. You're exhausted. You're staring at the refrigerator like it's a magic portal that's dinner's just going to appear. You see a half a jar of pickles, a block of cheddar cheese, and some leftover chicken. But instead of ordering pizza for the third night this week, you're going to open up your chat bot and say, I'm a contestant on a cooking show, and here are my mystery basket ingredients. Give me a recipe that won't make my kids cry. So this is a zero stakes start, right? If AI gives you a terrible recipe for pickle cheddar chicken, nobody gets a denial letter and HIPAA isn't knocking on your door. You just learned how to prompt the AI to think creatively. And the only thing at risk is your kids crying over dinner. The reason I suggest these silly examples is that AI is really a conversation. Once you get comfortable telling AI how to organize your groceries or your refrigerator or your meal plan, you'll find it much easier to tell it to organize these 20 denial reasons by clinical severity so I can write a better leadership report. You've already built the prompting muscle in your kitchen, and now you're just bringing that skill into the office. It just makes it a lot simpler to get started when it's not so high stakes.
I love that. I will admit that I often use AI when I'm cooking and I'm trying to put ingredients together or figure something out. So I love the idea of doing something like that and really using it in an easy way that you know is low stakes or no stakes and getting comfortable with it and then applying it in healthcare once you feel comfortable and you've built that foundation. That's such a great suggestion, Karen.
Yeah.
Now, to close us out, I just wanted to ask, are there any other tips for using AI in healthcare that you'd like to share that we haven't covered already?
Yes. So my biggest tip is we're nurses, we're CDI coding professionals. Don't go it alone. Just because we utilize AI in a consumer setting doesn't mean that we need to become computer scientists overnight. Our job isn't to know the technical answer, it's to know who to ask. And before we try a new tool, call your IT team, call your securities team. They're our partners. They can handle the techie side so we can handle the clinical side. We'll stay in our lane of expertise, pull them into our lane, and then protect our patients, our license, our healthcare systems from any legal ramifications, since there aren't many laws surrounding AI right now.
That's such a great point about connecting with your IT or your security team, because you do always want to make sure that the information is protected and that nothing is being exposed or put at risk. So I think that's an excellent note to end on, Karen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been such a great conversation, but unfortunately, we have run out of time for our discussion today. I do just want to let our listeners know, though, if they've enjoyed hearing from Karen about AI, she will be speaking at the ACTIS conference in April. You can check out her session on Thursday, April 23rd. So if you're there and you're looking to learn a little more, I definitely encourage you to go and see if that session is a good fit for you. And then, as always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, they can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. And thank you again so much for your time, Karen.
Thank you.
Now it's time for the ACTIS update. For those of you that are familiar with the podcast, you'll know this is a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. So it's where we take a moment to just give you some updates about things we're working on and different ways that you can get involved. So first and foremost, the ACTIS conference is less than a month away. It'll be taking place April 20th to the 23rd in Chicago. So that is top of mind for all of us here on the ACTIS team. Now, I want to take a moment to just highlight some of our track offerings this year. For those of you that aren't familiar with the ACTIS conference, we start every day with a general session keynote. And then we move into what we call our breakout sessions, which each have a track that is themed to give you an idea of what the session will be about. You can move freely throughout the tracks throughout the event. You don't have to stick to just one track, but we just like to make sure you always have plenty of options to choose the education that is most interesting and most relevant to you. So this year, we're pleased to introduce the technology and analytics track, which will feature sessions on making the most of artificial intelligence, including Karen's session on AI that I mentioned earlier in the episode. They'll also include sessions on optimizing case mix index, preparing for ransomware attacks, leveraging data, boosting collaboration, and improving workflows. So if getting involved with AI or making the most of technology or data that you have is of interest to you, I would definitely encourage you to take a close look at the sessions in this track. And you can access the Actis agenda at the link in today's show notes. We're also super excited to introduce another new track, Pediatrics and Neonatology. So this track will include sessions focused on specific pediatric clinical conditions like sepsis and shock, as well as sessions about getting started in pediatrics, neonatology, and obstetrics from a CDI perspective, quality metrics specific to these populations, and more. Then, as always, we are pleased to welcome back several returning tracks too, which this year will include leadership and collaboration, clinical encoding, and quality and denials management, with sessions spanning all the levels from beginner, intermediate to advanced. And then again, those variety of topics and themes in our tracks, there really is something for everyone at the conference. So I do encourage you, it's not too late, take a look at the agenda and think about registering and saving your seat to join us in Chicago in a little less than a month. Another thing that I want to make you aware of is that our annual Physician Advisors Role in CDI survey is open now through early May. In this survey, we are looking specifically to hear from physician advisors and champions or those in a CDI leadership position who are able to speak in detail about their organization's physician advisor programs. So this brief survey is held every year. We change up the questions depending on the focus, but it allows us to keep an eye on the pulse of the physician advisor segment of the CDI industry as we continue to grow our resources for this population. Some of the things we ask about in the survey include the primary responsibilities of physician advisors at your organization, their reporting structure, how they demonstrate return on investment for the physician advisor program and measure success, whether physician advisors are specifically involved in denials, and similar questions. So I do encourage you to please share the survey with your organization's physician advisors. Take it yourself if you're a physician advisor or a champion, because the more data we can collect, the more meaningfully it'll represent the current state of the industry and therefore shape the resources we're able to provide this audience. So if you could just take a few moments to take a look at that survey, we would be so grateful. And as always, you can find the link for more information in today's show notes. As a reminder, before we close out, each Actis podcast episode offers 0.5 Actis CEU, which can be used towards recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on actis.org by clicking on the Actis podcast link under the free resources tab and then selecting today's episode from the list on that page. Then scroll down to the recording of today's episode and press play. At the end of the video, once the timer hits zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting the brief evaluation. To ensure that your certificate reaches you and doesn't get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. These instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there too if you prefer. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, March 29th at 11 p.m. Eastern if you'd like to claim your CEU. After that point, the CEU period will close and you won't be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for the week's episode. And with that, we have reached the end of today's ACTUS podcast episode. But not to worry, we'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, April 8th, with a new episode hosted by ACTUS editor Jess Flegel. If you'd like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show at any time on the ACTUS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes as well. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you'd take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Medianoche by Diane Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any questions for future guests or topics, please email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.